Welcome back, new talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Okay, now you're in the way. I have a special guest this evening for this podcast. This guest cannot speak. All it can do is sneeze. It has allergies. It is a dog, a visiting dog. And when I start talking, the dog comes downstairs and wants to be with me. So the dog will be joining me in this podcast. Probably won't say much, but it does sneeze. And I'm not sure what to do with dogs that have allergies. And I've never really seen a dog that has allergies, but this dog is exceptional in its allergenic responses. It will sneeze and wheeze. It's actually not funny because we're trying to figure out what to do with it. But anyway, she's here, and you might hear her in this podcast. Then again, you might not. So, what am I going to talk about in podcast 643, the Bob Davis Podcasts? Well, if you have been listening to the podcast, you know, and if you listen to me on the radio, you know that I was prone to say, I got a feeling something is going to happen. So, we're going to talk about angst and accelerated rapid change in podcast 643. Well, normally, this would be the spot where I would say, hey, if you want to have Ryan Plumbing come over and check your AC, this would be a good time to do it because it's over 70 degrees. But in Minnesota, we are experiencing what I am now going to call, we are now in danger, speaking of angst, of what I would refer to as a busted summer. A busted summer is a summer that never gets warm. And usually we are in the 80s and 90s by July 4th. Excuse me. There's the dog again. See what I mean? We're in the 80s and 90s by July 4th. And we're not probably going to get there. So no, Ryan probably won't come over and check your AC because, as you know, most people haven't even turned it on yet. I certainly haven't turned my AC on. But if you do need that, Ryan Plumbing and Heating will come over and check your AC to make sure all the systems are working and running right. But I will just do, I'll talk about two things related to Ryan. One, emergency service, because when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488 online at RyanPlumbing.com. So that's the whole pitch for emergency service. The second thing is, this is the time, if you're inclined, to do things like put in-floor heating in your garage or your basement. Greg Ryan, who owns Ryan Plumbing and Heating, showed me the systems that they use to put in the in-floor heating. It's pretty amazing, and it's pretty permanent, believe it or not. So if you're redoing your house or your basement or your garage floor, in-floor heating is one of those things that's really great for a bathroom or a basement. So talk to Ryan Plumbing about that. They can make you a good deal on that. Residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Once again, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis. 612-927-6488 online at RyanPlumbing.com. Well, people have been asking me, I'm back from the trip, and people have been asking me, what's the next destination? And that is the EAA Air Show, basically the last week of July. And as always, I will be there with Alpha Systems. And if you're a pilot, you know, if you're going to go to EAA, you want to get there safely, right? That is the whole thing. So I'll be there for Alpha Systems. What do they do? Alpha Systems, AOA, makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. With Alpha Systems, AOA, in your cockpit, you don't have to feel or guess how close to stall you are during the turn to final because you've got an electronic indicator at eye level showing how much lift your wing is producing, and that is critical. If you're coming to EAA, you're going to want to see Alpha Systems demonstrate the Alpha Systems AOA. I'll tell you more about it going forward, or you can check them out at Alpha Systems AOA online. Just Google Alpha Systems AOA. Well, angst is often confused with anxiety. Angst, A-N-G-S-T, angst. It is a word of German origin, basically, also in Dutch, Danish, and Norwegian. It means fear. In German, it means anxiety. And it has become a flexible literary term and a flexible definition. It is often confused with anxiety, a transcendent emotion in that it combines the unbearable anguish of life with the hopes of overcoming the seemingly impossible situation. Without the important element of hope, then the emotion is anxiety and not angst. Angst denotes the constant struggle one has with the burdens of life that weigh on the dispossessed and not knowing when the salvation will appear. So that's one definition or explanation of the word angst. And I'll post links for these. But I chose it because one of the things I've been doing lately is I'll think, oh, gee, I should do a political podcast, or I should do something that's relevant to the political situation. Then I look at the political news and it makes me ill, and I develop a feeling of dread, anxiety, or anguish, which is another way of defining the noun angst. And so I don't want to necessarily talk about that stuff. A lot of it is just because, as I've outlined in many podcasts, and I'm not going to do it again in this podcast, a lot of it is just simply rehashing and opinion upon opinions about opinions and commentary with very little facts. It's just what people think is going to happen. So that is partially one of the producers of the angst that we feel in the society. There are many others, and I think the retransmitters of all of this commentary and commentary on commentary and talk about what is to come produced this more angst-filled society that we currently live in. And I guess to a degree it depends on your interpretation of the word angst, dread, anxiety, or anguish. And if you will, combined with a sense of hope. And the other thing is this sense that things are changing in our country rapidly. Now, if you think about it, not too long ago, during the political season, which seems like a million years ago now, I often talked about how we were at the beginning of an era change, E-R-A, an era change, not an area change, but an era change, on the cusp of two different eras. We lived through the Bush era and then the Obama era, and now the Trump era has dawned. But I wouldn't say that in terms of history that people would look back on them and say that these eras follow presidencies necessarily. But it does feel that things are rapidly changing. And I talked about it in many, many podcasts I did during the election season. These days, in reality, just a few short weeks since the election certification and inauguration of a new president. So we've been through the first 100 days, and now we're, I don't know how many days in, 200 some days. So really, it's 3 to 4 or 5 months. If you cut it down to weeks, it's 13 or 14 or 15 weeks. It's a television season or half a television season from the new president being inaugurated. And I am not saying that the new president is a change agent. I am saying that things are changing so fast, it will be soon hard to determine which came first, the chicken or the egg, because I feel that we are heading into, you know, I think there are times when things feel stable, and then I think that there are times when things feel very much in flux. And I think this is one of the roots of a lot of the anxiety, or if you will, angst that people in this country feel. So let's think about this a little bit. 5 years ago, and I mean 5 years ago, social media was in its infancy compared to today. Think about this. Social media, and I looked this up before I did this podcast because I wanted to make sure, it's only roughly 17 years old, and that goes back to the prototypes and the beta tests to today. Instagram did not exist 7 years ago. Twitter is only 11 years old. These forms of social media took 4 or 5 years to sort of gestate and become kind of the uber overarching media that they are today, to the point where they are challenging traditional media for speed of spreading information, for being a news source, and everything else. So they enjoy a great deal of prominence today. 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, if you'd have told somebody that Facebook would be what it is today, I don't know that they would have believed you. Some would, but 10 years and 15 years ago, no one would have believed it. Certainly computer scientists, people who studied things like that might have been able to predict these kinds of things, but they couldn't have predicted the degree of prominence in our society that social media has been able to gain in just 5 years. A lot of it has to do with the devices, which I'll talk about in a second. But think about also things like the delivery of food to your home, retail goods, services, texting for things like coffee, paying for things like coffee literally with your phone, joining the development of smartphone and pad devices. So this is what I meant. The iPhone is just 10 years old. Compare your iPhone with the flip phone that you had in the late 90s or even the first Android devices, which are younger than the iPhone. I still have one of my Motorola flip phones, and the thing is gigantic. And it seemed so compact and small in 1997, and it looks like a brick now. And of course, the new phones are bigger, but the things that they do, they're actually hand-carried computers, whether they're iPads or the new iPhone 7. So in terms of memory, capabilities, software, apps, things like that, there's virtually no comparison to these things. If you were to go back just 10 years, you might find a world completely different than today's world. If you go back 20 years, the world that you would see would be as different from today as it might be from the 1970s again. By the way, the rumbling that you hear occasionally is this dog that's sitting here. Wait till she starts breathing heavy. That'll be quite a fun thing. But you know what? The dog helps cut the angst, so it's a good thing. Another example would be that 10 years ago, the word disruption was kind of a buzzword at best. Today, everybody knows what disruption means because many of us have experienced actual disruption in some way, shape, or form in the workplace. Most of us today have a negative view of the concept of disruption. In other words, online businesses overtaking traditional brick and mortar type businesses or traditional businesses that have been around a lot. In my world, see, there you go. That's what I mean. This is dog allergies. In my world, it's broadcast television and radio being supplanted by media delivered over the internet on demand. So that's a good example. Just 10 years ago, 5 years ago, Netflix was still a company that delivered CDs to people, you know, DVDs to people to watch. There was no such thing as on-demand HBO. Well, there was, but it was pretty clunky. But I mean, I'm talking about HBO Go, being able to virtually watch all the television that you want, with no commercials, without having to get cable. Things like that were impossible just 5 years ago, almost. You know, I cut the cable, but I was using my computer to watch things. And now it's delivered through an interface called Apple TV. In my case, other people use different types of interfaces to get on-demand television when they want. So disruption can take on many forms for most people, but for a lot of people, disruption has meant losing a job. It can also mean opportunity if it is handled right, but the angst factor here is we don't think about it as opportunity because we're told constantly that disruption is a bad thing, right? So that's one example. Given the instantaneous transmission of video from events these days, this is another source of a lot of angst. So police shootings, boat sinkings, plane crashes, terror events, storms, war, we see these things before we even understand what they're all about. We can feel the terror, joy, fear, whatever from the source and the scene before anybody really understands what it is. We experience it differently, though, because we're watching it than the people who are actually there. So there's definitely a texture. There is a latency to actually being at an event where a boat sinks or someone is beat up or something, a protest, versus seeing it on iPhone footage or camera footage. So we experience it when we see it in the collective we through social media or through electronic media differently than what the people who were there saw it and experienced it as. So the question then, if and I think this is a problem because I think we're all suffering from various forms of I don't want to say post-traumatic stress syndrome because that's really not fair, especially to the people who were in the wars, are in the wars, are experiencing these terrible events. But at the same time, there's almost a sort of secondary form of angst and anxiety combined with some form of hope, right? If you follow the definition, that comes from so much, and I'll use the term latency, which is this ability to very quickly touch on so many different things and get reaction to so many different things. So in this podcast, I want to talk a little about what I think should be done about this. Now, another trip I'm going to be taking very soon is heading out to Sturgis. If you ride, you know when Sturgis is, and we will be there with Ciro3D, Ciro3D.com. This is the great motorcycle products and accessories company, especially lighting options and solutions. So they make front lights, they make rear lighting options that allow you to be seen and to see as well. And I will just leave it at that. That's one of the most important things. Check out Ciro3D.com. Sign up to get one of their catalogs because they make a ton of really, really great products and accessories for your motorcycle. Happy summer, such as it is in the upper Midwest, and ride safe. Ciro3D.com. We'll see you at the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Ciro will be at the Black Hills Harley-Davidson dealer right there in Rapid City just before you get to the turnoff for Sturgis. Ciro3D.com or click on that banner at the top of the page of the BobDavisPodcasts.com. So once you start thinking about all the negative implications as the result of all kinds of modern media, which are rapidly overtaking any form of traditional media, which weren't that great to begin with, it's only getting stronger. All of these modern disruptions due to tech are only going to increase and get stronger. For example, all the angst about robotics and autonomous software and machines, all the writing about the dangers of these things taking over our society and forcing us to work for them, driverless cars, driverless deliveries, drones, people being put out of work by autonomous fruit and vegetable pickers, things that I usually celebrate because I think they're pretty amazing just in terms of productivity. There is, and I've often described it this way, we're kind of creating a base on which a new world will stand up. And that's the best way for me to put it. And it would be an easy podcast for me if I just said, well, the antidote to all of this angst is to love everyone. That would be just too easy. Certainly, there are people that suggest that that's what you have to do. But I feel that there is a need for judgment because what's happening here is we are standing up a new world on new building blocks. And the new building blocks, especially if you're of a certain age, are frightening because they're completely different. They don't follow the old rules. They are used differently than the traditional things that they replace. And so you get all this angst about Amazon buying Whole Foods, for example. And you get all this angst about what happens if Amazon makes food cheaper. Well, that's good, right? If things are cheaper, but you have people writing articles, which I think are ridiculous, about how Amazon making food cheaper means deflation and that's bad and everything else. Well, this is what I mean by angst, because you have to be able to use your judgment to put things in perspective to try to figure out, well, is the driverless car a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's both, really. There will be all sorts of things that will happen because of driverless cars and driverless deliveries and drones and driverless trucks, if that's what happens. And it requires people to develop a sense of judgment. So if you just love everybody and try to love away the problems, that really doesn't work either because you have a need for judgment, individual judgment on a wide range of issues and collective judgment. Plural judgment about what to do and how to address problems. Can you love terrorism away? I would say no. I don't think you can. Perhaps in some energetic world you could, but I don't think we will, because my judgment tells me that that is not, the lack of love is not the reason terrorism exists. Can you love hate and violence away from any quarter? Again, what causes violence? What causes hate? How do these things operate in our society? The problem here is answering these questions and answering them with some degree of confidence in order to make judgments. And the problem with judgments is certain people might disagree with judgments. You might disagree with other people's judgments. And so all this has to be litigated. And that becomes quite an issue in our society and adds to the angst. How do you incorporate that kind of philosophy, if it is a philosophy, this idea of requiring judgment, into any kind of philosophy that requires thought, analysis, and action? How do you incorporate the philosophy of, let's say, loving away the things that are bad into any kind of philosophy that requires thought, analysis, and action, whether it's business, whether it's life, whether it's politics? Because at some point, people have to do real work. At some point, people have to do real research. At some point, people have to answer questions definitively. So for me, I'll just say it's for me, but it's for all of us. So I'm going to throw out some ideas and some methods for dealing with that non-specific fear and loathing that is combined with a sense of hope, which is often unfounded. I might feel afraid in a plane trip, but hope and against hope that the plane won't crash. How do I feel calm? Well, the answer to that question is easy. And it's an extreme example, but the first step in not being afraid on a plane is understanding what the plane is doing and understanding what the probabilities are of the plane crashing and understanding what the sounds are so that you're not frightened by everything that happens. That's the beginning. So whatever the concern, knowledge is the first step. If you'll recall, if you ever learned to swim when you were a kid, when you first went into the water, you were terrified because you thought you were going to drown until they said, if you just float, you can float, and then we'll give you this float thing, and you can kick, and then you learn to kick. So how did they teach us to swim? I suppose some people just got thrown into the water, but what we were taught to swim is first you went into the shallow end so that there was no fear. Then you held on to the lower lip of the pool. Then you stretched your body out and you learned to kick. And then once you learned to kick, you realized that your kicking held your body up. It created some buoyancy. Then they handed you that float and you held on to the float and kicked down to the deep end of the pool and back. And then once you did that, you realized that you weren't going to sink to the bottom of the pool, right? Then they taught you arm strokes by standing in the shallow end and stroking with your arms. Then they said, now kick and stroke, and then that was the beginning of suddenly being able to swim. Once you learn to swim, you will never forget. Same thing with a bike. At first, you feel that you could never do it. It seems impossible, and then you can do it. Now, a baby doesn't have any concept of being afraid to stand up. Babies fight to be able to crawl first, then they feel strong enough, and they fight to stand. And I always am amazed if you're lucky enough to see any child's first steps, because once they're able to stand, they're just a short way away from figuring out how to walk, and they take those first very tentative steps, and then they run. They just take off once they figure it out. So it's kind of neat to see that. We don't, as adults, we don't always do that. I see it in yoga all the time when people do backbends. When I do backbends, you're afraid you're going to fall over, and then you realize if you fall over, you'll just catch yourself, or even inversions, going into a headstand. You think, oh, I can't do a headstand. I'll fall over and hurt myself. Kids do it all the time without even thinking about it. They go do headstands because they like to invert. It feels good. They're not afraid that they're going to fall, because if they fall, they'll just get up and do it again. But it's an extreme example. But knowledge is the first step. It's understanding, if I fall, I can get back up. I'm not going to hurt myself. If I find out that I can't swim, I can always just float, or I can kick my way back to the shallow end, right? So whatever your concern, I think knowledge is the first step. and educating ourselves about the item in question, whatever it is. This is why unbiased information, just basic facts, is so important. You know, I was on Facebook not too long ago, and a friend of mine said that she was really scared and feeling, you know, like she couldn't even leave the house. And she listed things like global warming as an example of why she was so scared. Well, what are the actual temperatures, you know, and how do you measure the actual temperatures? How are those temperatures measured? Find out about that. Where are the thermometers? What's the difference between the temperature recorded on the planet's surface and the satellite temperatures? What is the safety record of a pipeline, for example, if you're worried about pipelines versus oil being hauled by trains? How many police shootings actually occur, and what are the circumstances of each of those shootings? If you go through all of them in terms of just understanding what each police-involved shooting is, what the court case showed, what the actual facts were, your opinions and fear regarding those things might change. How many big retailers have gone out of business and why? And how many went out of business, for example, Blockbuster? How many retailers went out of business long before we started talking about these dangerous disruptions as the result of artificial intelligence or autonomous machines or anything else developed? And what were the circumstances of big retailers going out of business or actually in a death spiral for a number of years, like Sears, for example? What's the difference between Sears and Starbucks, or Sears and Core Power, or Sears and CrossFit, or any of these different services? Why does one mall go out of business and another one succeed? Why does one small town fail and another one succeed? Most of the time, we don't ask ourselves those questions because we don't care. We react to the fear. We react to the angst. We react to the, this country is going to hell in a handbasket sort of approach, instead of thinking, well, let's find out about that. What is the reality? And that's one of the reasons I travel, as I said in the travel podcast, because most of the country is actually empty, and all you hear about is overcrowding. There's not going to be enough to eat, and there's too many people, and the cities are this and that, and these terrible things are happening, and then you drive literally 40 minutes out of most major cities, and you're in almost the middle of nowhere. So that's an interesting thing to think about. Finding out the actual facts about things. Why does that dog make that noise? Well, we figured out over the weekend the dog has allergies. Well, what do you do about a dog having an allergy? I guess you give him Benadryl. I don't know. We don't want to do it because we don't know what the side effects will be until we find out whether or not we can actually give the dog Benadryl, right? So that's another thing. And then once you get knowledge, you can develop some perspective. It is said life experience is the best teacher, and I agree with that. What is your life experience, and why do you and I feel the way we do about things, and how do we feel differently about things? How is our life experience good and bad, or not good, right? Let's not even say bad. It's also getting a perspective on the things that scare us, whether it is autonomous machines, terrorism, the dark, disease, or any of those things, the things that we fear the most in life, you know? And the feeling also that we are prepared. My friend in Tennessee always takes a go bag in the car with him, and it's got a firearm in it, and it's got bullets, and it's got first aid, and it's got flashlights and other stuff. And he takes it with him every time he gets in the car because he feels more secure having the go bag there in case something happens, up to and including that weird aluminum foil blanket that you can wear if it's cold. I think it's overkill, but he does it because it helps him feel better. So he's prepared himself. So having a go bag, or having a bunch of cash in reserve, or having a concealed carry permit, or whatever it's called, you know, whatever they call the permit in your state, or maybe not having that, whatever it is that you need to have to feel prepared, I think has a lot to do with dealing with angst. We hear these things all the time about what's going to happen, but then we don't do anything about it because we're getting layered upon layer upon layer upon layer of fear and anxiety. And at the same time, we're getting these converse messages of hope. So we have all this angst because we're inundated, we're flooded with countervailing messages, and it confuses people and it causes all this angst. And then what about taking real action, which I think is very important in the community, like helping people in your community that you may not agree with politically, or having people help you who you may not agree with politically. It means reaching out to other people in the community who both feel the same way that you do and maybe don't feel the same way that you do. Maybe there's some activity that brings people together who don't agree about things politically. Maybe you get to learn that some people that you thought that you disagreed with them were horrible people aren't, or they are. Either way, you'll know, right? And then finally, I think it's getting strategic about how we take in information. We do not need to check social media every 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 30 seconds. I mean, you can if you want, but sometimes just telling yourself checking your Facebook or Twitter feed isn't necessary is enough to know that you don't have to do that. My excuse is I'm always monitoring because I post my podcasts. I don't interact about things, and I've taught myself not to. There's many times where I want to type something and I just say, no, I'm not going to do that. We do not need to maintain a vigilant 24-hour-a-day news watch. It is not necessary to check Drudge every 20 minutes. It is not necessary to find out what the headlines are on CNN every 5 minutes, because the truth is not much changes. Certainly the headlines might change and stories might get updated, but things are not going to change that much. And if you doubt me, put it down for 30 days and come back. You'll be shocked at how much the same things are. And then finally, not everything that happens is negative. Sometimes things happen that are good. Sometimes you have to say somebody you didn't agree with had a good week. Sometimes just because you don't like a particular situation or president or people, sometimes they do things that make sense. So regardless of whether or not the future's been predicted already, this is what's going to happen to this guy. This is what's going to take place here. And we all say it to each other. It doesn't mean that that is actually what's going to happen. And then, of course, I think taking time to get away from it all works wonders. Again, travel is fantastic. It is a salve for this stuff because, you know, the miles roll by and you forget what day it is and you just enjoy seeing life pass you by in your vehicle. This is why I say that my television when I'm traveling is actually the windshield. So it's pretty cool. It works wonders. Getting away from it all gives you perspective. Here's one that a friend of mine used to do all the time because I'm very kinetic and I talk a lot. One time he called me into the office and he goes, "Do you ever just sit in your office and listen?" And I go, "No, what do you mean?" And he said, he wasn't talking or walking around like he usually was. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I sit in here sometimes and I just listen and I don't say anything. I just sit in my office very quietly and I listen to everything in the station. And that was our work radio station. I listen to everything people say and I listen to just the ambient to try to get an idea, to get a feel, you know, to sort of take the temperature of the place." And once I started doing that, it was very interesting to just go to your workplace where you usually interact, sit down in your cubicle and don't say a word, don't do anything, just sit in your chair and listen and tell me what you learn by doing that sometimes. So basically setting the transceiver in our minds and bodies to receive rather than to transmit. And somebody like me really needs to hear that, especially content creators. Finally, for political people, it's realizing the answer is sometimes hiding in plain sight. It is not at the political meeting. I know a lot of political meeting people, and all they do is go to these political meetings every weekend, every day, 3 times a week, and everything else. And, you know, the truth is you can let that stuff go. And first of all, it'll always be there. And secondly, you'll still be thinking about it and coming to conclusions and dreaming about it. And you might come to different kinds of conclusions if you walk away from it for a while. Yes, the world is changing, really changing rapidly. We're really moving into it now, largely because, as I said, of the tools we use, which are becoming building blocks to stand up a new world, which is what all this technology that we're using is. Tools which are in many ways just like locomotives and airplanes were 100 years ago. Things that frightened people and were frightening in that they produced a new world. They produced a nuclear age, really. And, the nuclear age the world that now is coming to a close as we build a new world on top of that was built on that industrial revolution world. And people were terrified of it. They didn't understand that you can't stop progress. Even if you want to, you can't even slow it down anymore. We aren't going to make social media go away. The world that we used to know is gone and going, and it is never coming back. So we aren't going to be able to get back to the 1950s or the 1960s or even the 1980s. People have strange and frightening views on things sometimes, and certainly there are ways to proceed which will produce a better result than other ways. The discussions that we need to have should not be on feelings, but things we can prove and things that work or don't work so that we can produce a better world rather than the world that I want versus the world that you want. So if the world's going to change and you want the fear and loathing to stop, you have to employ strategies to deal with it. Animals, especially animals that can't breathe. Time off, time with friends and family, time alone, time in silence. And I will say prayer and meditation, although I'm not big on religion. I know people that are seem to be a little bit more peaceful and that prayer does work. And you know it works. And then I think some kind of physical practice, whether it's yoga or martial arts or hunting or hiking or whatever it is that you do, is really, really important. And that is how you get rid of your angst, or at least that's what I think. Thanks again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. And remember, Ryan, for emergency service. Remember, their number is 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com, because when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want to keep systems operating, especially at business, but also at home. Remember, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. So I especially want to thank people for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com with the audio streaming. And I appreciate the subscriptions on iTunes and also listening on blogtalkradio.com, stitcher.com, or tunein.com. And I do appreciate, despite the angst, the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for mobile podcast command. I just got another donation just this week, and I was going to mention it, but I don't have my phone here. So see what I mean? I can't, the angst, I can't remember anything if I don't have the phone, but I will get to that in the next podcast. Anyway, thanks for listening to podcast 643. Destruction.